The element of consciousness. In that meditation, which I think most of you were here for, we went through the six elements, and these elements have been, I think, the subject of the talks and the meditations for the last 6 weeks. And in that meditation, you get a little bit of the experience of each element. You know, take your attention into the earth element that you experience, etc., and into the water element that you experience. The consciousness element, we visualized it, but we didn't really, I mean, I don't know what happened in your meditation, but I didn't go into what that consists of, what that's about. Except to say, it's everything that you hear, everything that you see, everything that you smell, everything that you taste, everything that's experienced as a touch sensation, and it's everything that you imagine, or everything that pops into your mind, you could say. I'm quite interested to know how you got on with that meditation. Maybe there'll be a bit more time after this to have some questions. But the practice is, as well as being, as well as kind of focusing on the elements in experience, it's also focusing your experience so that you get to consider the element of fire in your experience. You get to consider the element of consciousness. From the point of view of practicing the Dharma, the important thing is just to know that this is consciousness. It's like identifying in our experience what is what. So in our experience there is earth, there is water, there is fire. And doing that, identifying these primary aspects of our experience, they just bring alive the awareness that we have been born. They bring alive the awareness that we are embodied beings. It's something very, very basic. And so it's something that will motivate us spiritually, because it makes us remember that we radically do not understand the nature of our existence. You know, if you can take your attention away from all the things that, if I can do this as well, all the things that preoccupy me, all the things I'm anxious about, all the things that keep me awake at night or whatever, and just concentrate on the basics, like, I have been born into this life. What is my life? What is it? What is happening here? Then I think this changes the picture. It changes the way we experience our lives. And I think this is what the elements practice is supposed to do. The Buddha taught the elements in two main parts of the two main suttas, in the Pali suttas anyway. He may have taught it elsewhere, but I don't know about. But the two well-known sources for his teachings on the elements are the Satipatthana Sutta, which is the main discourse on mindfulness, and all the modern teachings of mindfulness come out of this Satipatthana Sutta. And he also taught it in another sutta called the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. Dhatu means elements, so it's about that. So I'm just going to say a little bit from each of these sources of the Buddha's teaching. So in the Satipatthana Sutta, the section where he talks about the elements, he talks about the four elements, not the six, but the four. He talks about earth, water, fire, and air. And he talks about them in the section on the body. So the Buddha's talking about being aware of the body. And he uses the elements as a way to bring our attention into the body. So all this tremendous emphasis on body awareness comes essentially from this part of the Satipatthana Sutta. And he says, this is the translation of from the oral tradition. Again, monks, he's talking to monks, but he's talking to us as well. He and she, reviews this body. However it is placed, however it is disposed, as consisting of elements. Thus, in this body there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. And then a bit later on he says, in this way, in other words, in regard to these four elements, he abides contemplating the body internally, or he abides contemplating the body externally. Or, in other words, contemplating somebody else's body, right? Because others have bodies too. It's part of the reflection. You think, I am an embodied being, she's an embodied being, he's an embodied being. What is this all about? You know, it's like that. That sort of contemplation. Or she abides contemplating the body both internally and externally. She abides contemplating the nature of arising in the body. What comes up? What changes? Or he abides contemplating the nature of passing away in the body. Or he abides contemplating the nature of both in the body. And then finally, mindfulness that there is a body is established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness. And he abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. So that gives a bit of an idea of how we apply the elements teaching. It's about noticing the change that happens, noticing that things come into being, things seem to stay as they are, and then they seem to go. For example, I came into being like 67 years ago. This body came into being 67 years. There have been various changes. You probably wouldn't have noticed the difference day by day, but the changes are as they are now. So this is what's happening to all of us. And it's neither good nor bad. It's just how it is. So in our system of practice, in the way that we in the Tri Ratna order and movement approach meditation and other Dharma practices, this practice of the elements is both what we call a shamatha, or a calming, kind of healthful practice, and a vipassana, or an insight practice. It's both of these, and it can be approached in different ways. I think the approach that I took in the meditation earlier was more what we call shamatha. It's more to do with coming into the present moment and simply being, if you like, and simply experiencing ourselves in a deeper way. The insight aspect of it comes in when we look into the fact that we strongly identify with the elements as me or mine. We think, I'm hot, I'm cold. We think, this is my space. This is my space. That's your space over there. There's an ego identification with the elements in different ways. You know, there's a lot of water element in our body. We might feel embarrassed about that. You know, that will be a kind of ego identification with the element of water. So there are many, many different aspects of ego identification that are revealed through contemplating the elements, and that's the whole idea from an insight point of view. From a calming or a shamatha point of view, the elements are calming just because that is our experience. It's like focusing on what is there, kind of grounds us in a certain way. You might have had, I don't know how the meditation was for you, but you might have had that experience of feeling quite grounded and settled in the practice. So that was the Satipatthana Sutta, or the Basic Mindfulness Sutta. The Dhatuvibhanga Sutta. This sutta especially specializes, you could say, in the insight aspect. Although actually the Satipatthana Sutta does as well in its own way. So some quotes from that second sutta. Buddha says, "A person has six elements. Thus it was said. In reference to what was it said? These are the six elements. The earth element, the liquid element, the fire element, the wind element, the space element, the consciousness element. A person has six elements. Thus was it said. And in reference to this was it said." And he goes through the whole lot, you know, in more detail. I'm just going to give the example of the earth element, and then the consciousness element. And what is the earth element? The earth element can be either internal or external. What is the internal earth element? Anything internal within oneself that's hard, solid, and sustained. Head hairs. Body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, tendons, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, membranes, whatever they are, spleen, lungs, large intestines, small intestines, contents of the stomach, feces, or anything else internal within oneself that's hard, solid and sustained. This is called the internal earth element. Now, both the internal earth element and the external earth element are... Oh, he doesn't actually tell you what he means by the external earth element. I'll have to tell you. He means things like this: the floor, the walls, the substance of the flowers on the shrine, anything out there, basically, that has this quality of earth, of solidity, relative solidity. It resists the touch, as it were. Now, both the... going back to the Buddha, had to explain what he meant. Now, both the internal earth element and the external earth element are simply earth element. They're both of that quality. And that should be seen as it actually is, present with right discernment. This is not mine. This is not me. This is not myself. When one sees it thus, as it actually is, present with right discernment, one becomes disenchanted with the earth element and makes the earth element fade from the mind. And I think he means there, it doesn't kind of fade literally. It may do a bit, but he means it fades as an object of attachment. In other words, your experience both of the world and of being embodied just loosens up a bit, becomes a little bit less a bit more relaxed, you could say. The attachment, whether that attachment is through greed, through wanting it, through hatred, through really not wanting it, or from delusion. She was kind of not having wrong ideas about it. All these things kind of relax and resolve themselves through the insight that comes from this kind of reflection and looking at things. The way it's like the way you look at the world. And then he says, then I'm going to skip the water element, etc. I'm going to skip the water element, the fire element, the air element, and the space element, because he says more or less the same kind of thing. You know, he says, within ourselves there's water, out there there's water. Within ourselves there's fire, experience of heat, outside there is heat, etc. There's space in here, there's space out there. And then he says, there remains only consciousness, pure and bright. What does one cognize with that consciousness? Well, obviously, one cognizes all kinds of things. But the Buddha picks on feelings of pleasure and pain as kind of... he seems to think this is the main thing. One cognizes pleasure. And one cognizes pain. One cognizes neither pleasure nor pain. In other words, neutral kind of experiences. And what I notice here is that the Buddha describes consciousness as consciousness of something. There isn't any idea of consciousness as some kind of independent entity. You know, he's not talking about some kind of a ghost in the machine of the body, as it were. It's not some kind of special entity that is consciousness as an abstract thing. It's always consciousness of something. And that is what consciousness is in Buddhist tradition. I think we do tend to think a little bit of this kind of idea of a disembodied consciousness. But that's not Buddhist tradition. Anyway, this is the element of consciousness. And the Buddha seems to be saying the key thing is we're conscious of feelings of pleasure and pain. He uses these as the example anyway. There are also other many, many other things. So he says, in dependence on a sensory contact that is felt as pleasure, there arises a feeling of pleasure, obviously. When sensing a feeling of pleasure, one discerns that I am sensing a feeling of pleasure. He's just really looking into the detail of what happens when something pleasurable comes into our sense field, like I don't know, a nice person or a nicely lit room or somebody you like or so anything that we just feel pleasure basically. And one also discerns, if one really looks, that with the cessation of that very of that same sense contact, when that goes away, the feeling of pleasure that's arisen in dependence on that sense contact, that ceases. You just notice that when you take that away, when that's gone, the experience changes. It's like looking at really, really basic, simple things that everybody knows, but nobody pays any attention to. It's the same with painful experiences, and it's the same with all the millions of neutral experiences that we tend to dismiss because we don't get excited by them and we don't dislike them either. In other words, if you really look, you see that whether a sense contact is pleasant, painful or neutral, when it goes, the feeling also goes. And this leads to a realization that, you know, if you really look into this, it leads to a realization that all our experience is conditioned. And this realization gives us a certain... And when you get into that, when that starts to... You realize it's significant, you get a certain equanimity. You get a certain sense of, oh, this is really is how it is. This really is how it is. And something happens at that point, which is called equanimity. He talks about this a lot in the sutta, this equanimity. An equanimity towards objects of the mind, towards mind experiences. And it can also lead to a questioning of this sense that I am having this feeling. Yeah. So then he says, the Buddha says, we're still on the Buddha. He says, there remains only equanimity, pure and bright. He's describing this state, pliant, malleable and luminous. This is an insight sort of state. You sort of see the nature of things as being conditioned. And you think, oh yeah. It's a sort of equanimity. Bright, pliant, malleable and luminous. Just as if a skilled goldsmith were to prepare a furnace, heat up a crucible, and taking gold with a pair of tongs, place it in the crucible. Like it's getting really hot and he blows on it. He would blow on it time and again, sprinkle water on it time and again, examining it time and again, so that the gold will become refined, well refined, thoroughly refined, flawless, free from dross, free from anything that makes it not gold, pliant, malleable and luminous. And then whatever sort of ornament he had in mind, whether it was a belt or an earring or a necklace or a gold chain, he would be able to make that really nicely. It just gives an image, I think, for the nature of this equanimity. It's a mind that's very relaxed, very purified, and it's very workable in a certain way. And then the Buddha goes on to show how this state of equanimity can be taken further into meditation with what are called the formless jhanas, which are states based on partial insight, and then towards complete awakening. That isn't relevant to the talk tonight, but you get an idea of this kind of insight into the nature of our relationship with things through looking at the element of consciousness. There's a complete relaxation of the way we perceive the world. And what's important in these examples is the way we identify with the elements, whether they're physical or mental. So ego grasping occurs with both the physical elements of earth, water, fire and air, and with consciousness. And when we're able to let this go, seeing this means freeing up. There's a sense of freeing up and this kind of equalizing, this equanimity of mind. So the emphasis is on looking and seeing and letting go. So that's a bit of a general, talking generally about the elements there and how the elements practice works. And I think you've been looking into this over the last 5 weeks. So in a way, I'm seeing this as a bit of a recap of what's been taught. But what about consciousness? I think ego identity is especially good at hiding in consciousness. I think our tendency to get upset or the sense of being infatuated, that's the word I was looking for, getting upset with things because they're horrible or infatuated with things because they're so wonderful. This kind of ego identity based on a me gets very very easily caught up with consciousness. We really do identify strongly with consciousness as being mine, I think, which is quite understandable. I do it as well. I remember how earlier I mentioned that consciousness is something that we can think of as being independent from the body. We can think of a disembodied consciousness. In fact, Jinanda made a joke about he wasn't going to come down, but he has now. He said, I won't be coming down, but I'll send my consciousness down to listen to the talk. You know, and we can make jokes like that because we tend to think in that kind of way. It's easier for us to think in that kind of way. And I think consciousness seems special to us. We think it's more special than other experiences. I think we're very conditioned to see things in a hierarchical way, as there's got to be a boss. You know, who's in charge around here? You know, who is it who is in control here? There must be somebody in the control box. There must be a leader, as it were, of our experience, of me, as we sum it up as me, which is fair enough. But in the end, it's not literally like that. You know, we automatically think, my consciousness, me, I made that decision. I'm going to give that talk. I'm going to come and listen to that talk. I'm going to meditate. You know, I'm going to wear these trousers today. You know, I'm going to do that. I'm not going there. You know, all these decisions. And we think that I made them. And in a rough and ready sense, of course we did. But we can think of it rather literally, as though there literally is a... Is it a person? Or is it a something? What is it? I don't know what it is exactly, because it's an illusion, making that decision. There's a thing making that decision, and that is me. It's very difficult to describe what actually happens, and I don't think Buddhism even attempts to do that, but what it does say is that there is nothing particular and fixed there that is doing that. It's much different than that. So meditating on the element of consciousness is a pretty good way of looking into this, because Buddhism doesn't say it's like this. Buddhism says, have a look at this. Have a look at this. So there's a method. The method is, you have a look at this. You have a look at your experience of consciousness, or just the whole business of experiencing. Experiencing is consciousness, isn't it? So it's basically incredibly simple, but it's very hard for us not to make it very complicated. Consciousness is not a self. Consciousness is not the self, capital S. Consciousness is not me. Consciousness is not mine. It's not a possession of a thing that is me. We can say this, but it's no use saying it. You've got to see it. You know, you can't be told. You can't be told that. You've got to get into it. So when we're not looking at the way we experience the world, we're not looking at our consciousness, it definitely feels like a me. Because that's how we've always explained it to ourselves. So it definitely feels like that. We're jolted. When someone annoys us or we get upset, we're jolted into this flight-fight sort of mode, and immediately we grasp onto a self and think, don't tell me that, you know. Or, I like that so much. You know, we definitely start identifying with a self. But if at times when we're not so caught up in things, we're more disinterested, as, for example, in meditation, we sort of open up and say, oh, let's have a look at this. Let's have a disinterested look at this and try and understand it in meditation. Then we realise that the actuality of our experience of being in the world can't be expressed in those terms. It can't be expressed in terms of me and mine. I don't know how it can be expressed, but it can't. That does not express it. So we see that consciousness is not me and it's not mine. In fact, we don't have to have, you know, don't worry, you know, we don't have to have a particular idea of it. It's quite okay not to have a particular view on it. We don't have to identify it with anything. We don't have to identify it with the body or the senses. It's okay to have a loose, rough idea. We don't have to see it as a unit. I think this is another thing. We tend to think of consciousness as it's one individual thing, bounded by something or other, somehow. We can't help having these sort of ideas, but when you look into it, you start to see it's not as simple as that. We don't have to individualise it, even. We don't have to think about it at all, I've written. It's true. We can just let consciousness be without form or definition. I think Sangharakshita has written this somewhere, we can let go of limited consciousness into unlimited consciousness. We don't have to limit our ideas of what consciousness is. We can let go of confined consciousness, the idea that consciousness is boundaried somehow into unconfined or boundless consciousness, etc. I'll come to the end of my notes now, but so what this has been about is first a little bit of a meditation on consciousness to try and experience the fact that to experience the nature of consciousness. And we had the blue sky, and I said, whatever is arising in your awareness, whatever objects, whether it's a worry or it's a thought or it's a sense of irritation, whatever it is, these are phenomena arising and passing away in consciousness. That is it. And then we were looking at the fact that the Buddha said that you should pay attention to this element of consciousness, in terms of being mindful of it. And then we looked into this recommendation that we disidentify with it, or at least we examine our tendency to identify with consciousness and think, well, in a way, notice that you do it, that you do identify with it. I think we all need to do that, because I think it's often a revelation that we are identifying as me various aspects of consciousness. There are probably some departments that I haven't realised, I haven't seen, I haven't noticed that actually I identify in particular ways, because there are so many different aspects to ego grasping. And then we looked into the ways that you can just sit quite loose to that and not have such well-defined, boundaried ideas about what consciousness is. So I hope that gives you a bit of an overview. And we've got a bit of time for questions, and we might be able to clarify the many unclear areas that I'm sure still remain.